I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Tess Peters. Tess is the founder of Been There, an app which allows users to speak with individuals who have had similar body image struggles and mental health struggles to help them feel less alone and to navigate these difficult challenges. Hello, Tess.
Hello, Hannah.
How are you?
I'm good. Sunshiny days makes my day.
Yep, and it's Friday.
Oh, I know. I do feel like it's Saturday, I'm not going to lie. I'm sorry.
Do you?
How are you?
Just rubbing it in.
Yeah. It's been a long way.
Yeah, it should. I'm good, thank you. I'm actually super excited because I'm going to see S Club 7 this evening, which is awesome.
No.
So yeah. I'm very, very excited about that. I actually saw them. This is really, really sad, but I saw them when I was 4 years old. And when they came on stage, I turned my back to them and cried because I was like so overwhelmed that S Club 7 were on stage and I couldn't cope with that. And it was my mum's birthday and we had to go home because I was so distraught that S Club, I don't know why I was distraught. That's just so weird that S Club 7 were on stage. I didn't know how to cope.
Oh, that's so adorable. I just couldn't believe it. You really need to show your face.
I know, I do. Well, I still have the top from when I was four, and it absolutely drowned me. For it's now a crop top, but it does still fit like rather body. It's just very crop. So I'm wearing it. I don't care what it says. It says 2001 on it. So that's 21 years ago.
Which is... Oh, this is great. Can't wait to see a picture of this.
Oh dear. Anyway, yeah, so that's my activities. So I'm very excited for that.
Cool.
But also so excited to speak to you. I'm loving everything that you're doing. I think Being There is amazing. So I guess to start with, do you want to just explain to the listeners what Being There is and what it's about?
Yeah. So Being There is, I set it up as a charity and it's an app for people who are struggling with their body image and mental health concerns to chat to somebody who's been in a similar situation. And then all of the people that you can speak to are what we call mentors, and they've all been vetted and trained. So I want to make sure it's a safe place and people can have conversations and feel supported. It's like peer-to-peer mentoring, basically. So when I was younger, I was quite overweight, and then I've put on a lot of different diets, went to Weight Watchers and all sorts by my mother, bless her. And I kind of had this obsession with body image. I wanted to be this perfect figure that we saw. And that's kind of how I got into an eating disorder, actually. I watched Desperate Housewives, if you remember that program.
I do.
And Gabby on the program says, oh, you can eat the pizza, but just chuck it up after. And I thought, oh my God, what a great idea. You know, young, impressionable.
Yeah.
So I kind of started dabbling with accidentally an eating disorder without even realizing, which got completely exacerbated when I tried to get a job on yachts, basically on these sailing mansions. And you have to put your picture on your CV. Like, it's very image focused industry.
Right.
And I got interviewed for a job. And the woman was like, oh, I'm just going to interview you right now. And I was actually with my friend at the time. And she said, I'm going to choose your friend because you don't fit into the uniform that we've got, Tessa. So I was like, instantly told these stories to myself of like, you're fat, you're never going to get a job unless you're skinny. So that was when my eating disorder just blew out the water. So that was kind of the start of it. And I mean, most of an eating disorder for me was denial, and it is for a lot of people, isn't it?
Mm.
I don't know about you. Did you feel denial was a big thing?
I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day, actually, because I think I kind of knew that there was something wrong. But I think for me, it felt like such a long time ago as well, that I now kind of can't remember. I guess there was an element of denial.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know, because everybody around me was worried about their body.
Yeah.
I think maybe it wasn't denial. It was just like a normal thing in my life to feel like that.
Well, I remember telling my sister, and I was like, because I thought it was a clever trick at the beginning. I actually did lose weight at the beginning. That was the worst part of it all, I think. And, well, you're starving your body. And my sister was like, you've got a problem. And that's when I instantly thought, oh my gosh, I can't be here. Like, I need to work away all the time. Like, I don't want her to worry about me. This is not a problem. This is fine. Like, I was some sort of robot, you know, not really thinking about all the intricacies of what was going on. I always say, kind of wish that I had warts or something from it, and you could tell that you were putting your body through that, because you can't really see it until it's sometimes almost too late. Yeah. I'm still not reaping the benefits at all. Complete opposite from years of doing that. But realizing I had a problem took a long time. The denial went on for a long time. But when I wanted to get better, I wanted to speak to somebody who'd gone through something similar. I was searching for this relatability, which I didn't get from counsellors and therapists. But that's fair enough, because they can't actually divulge that they've been there because of their code of conduct. It's illegal.
Yeah.
And so then I needed to find somebody else, and it took a long time to find that person, because it's difficult to find relatable help. But I ended up going to, or finding out about EDA, which is Eating Disorders Anonymous. And I didn't even know that existed.
I didn't know that was a thing. No.
I didn't even know it was a thing either.
I didn't know that was a thing, no.
That's funny, yeah. I don't think a lot of people do. Yeah, so there's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's Narcotics Anonymous, there's Eating Disorders Anonymous. And from being overseas a lot, I never could go, good excuse. But then I remember being in London, and it took a lot of courage to walk through those doors. And it's on a Saturday morning, you do anything rather than be there. But when you go, you can ask for a sponsor, which is what I call a mentor. And that's somebody who's been through the 12 steps program and is here to help somebody else. So I immediately was like, yeah, I want a mentor. I want a sponsor even. Got given one, and it was so cool, Hannah. Like, I never met him. It was free. I spoke to him on the phone, and he'd been in a similar situation. And without him even saying anything, I was like, flip, this is so amazing and profound. I didn't feel so ashamed. I didn't feel so judged or alone, misunderstood. All of this just from the pure fact that he had been through something similar. So that was when my recovery really, really started. And that was also when Being There was born, from this power of relatability, this ability to find help from someone who's gone through something similar. And I was like, it's got to be accessible. So it's got to be an app. It's got to be for your phone.
Yeah.
There should be a charity. I think it should be free. So I wanted it to set up as a charity, which is quite a process to do. I think we should just be helping each other more, particularly if you've gone through experience. The power of shared experience. That's our tagline.
I think it's such an incredible idea, because I completely agree with you. Like, when you're in the depth of an eating disorder or struggling with body image, I think it can feel so isolating, because it's just such a you know, it's an experience that you have on your own. Nobody else can feel how you're feeling, or kind of they can, I guess you can try and explain it to people, but if they've not been there, then it's difficult. But I think the reason I really like kind of your approach to it is that I think there's definitely, you have to be careful when you're when you have an eating disorder, it can be really tempting to reach out to other people that have an eating disorder and kind of, you know, you connect to them and you kind of both understand what's going on. But I think that can be difficult because you're then like, I don't know, that's what I did when I had an eating disorder. I kind of reached out to people on Twitter and stuff like that. And we then became friends. And then none of us wanted to let go because it was like, well, so will we still be friends once we've not got this eating disorder? But I think having somebody that has had the experience of it and is now, you know, in a better place, yes, they can empathize with what you've been through, but also they are there also to support you to get out of it rather than kind of to sit with you in the hole, because that's the experience I had, and that made it really difficult to then move away from it.
Yeah, that's funny you should say that actually, because the sponsor, as they call it, that I had ended up going backwards a bit, as you do sometimes in recovery, and that's okay. So he got told by his sponsor to stop being my sponsor. And that was difficult because I felt like I found somebody who can help me, and it was really beneficial, and that kind of made me a bit more passionate and fiery about being there, because I wanted to have that somebody else that I could talk to for a little bit longer. But you don't want to be reliant on these people, so it was probably a really good thing. But it's definitely good to speak to somebody who's in a better place, but we're very much like, we're all still very equal. And I remember speaking to people or seeing people online, and it'd be like, I'm recovered, food is fuel, like woo woo woo, and I was just like, oh, that's feels like so far away, and that's really hard to attain. So having someone who feels a bit more like, on your path is important, but it's better to speak to somebody who's recovered.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of a question for you, is how, like, at what, I guess, what level of like recovered or whatever do you want the mentors to be? Is it something that like you would talk through with them and stuff? Because from my experience in previous jobs that I've had that have been related to mental health struggles that I've had, there's never really been that conversation. And I think if there was one thing I would change about when I've gone back to something that I've had experience of, so I've wanted to help people, is for somebody to kind of ask me honestly, where do you think you're at? I think that's the one thing that has been missed so far.
Really, really important, because you just take it at face value otherwise, or you're just assuming. It's a big part of our like application process, really. So as a mentor, you would join and fill out an application form. And then I have calls with all of them. That is one of the questions, is like, where are you at? How long have you been in a good place? You know, what do you do? All of those questions that are like, what do you do to help yourself? What do you find triggering? Those kind of like delving questions to really get them familiar with how they are and how they act in certain situations. Being aware, being self-aware is huge. And that's a big part of coping with an eating disorder, really, isn't it? Being more aware of the triggers and how you deal with them, rather than going to your old ways of dealing with them.
Self-awareness is something that I have been like really aware of lately, because I think that, like you were just saying, self-awareness is such a big part of recovery, in that, like, you know, when you were saying earlier about you almost were engaging in the behaviours, but you're in denial that there was an issue. It almost feels like now, if I am tempted by a behaviour or something, I'm so aware that I'm doing it is unbelievable. And I'm like, Hannah, like, why are you doing this? You need to stop. And that means that the like duration of it actually happening is so much shorter, because I'm like Hannah, like actual Hannah is like, oh my God, what are we doing? Like, don't do this. Like, but take so much time to think about why certain things have restarted again. Whereas before it would just be like, well, it happened, I'll just do it again. Tomorrow,
like, it happened so quick. I remember feeling the same thing. Like, it felt like it happened so quick. Like, there wasn't, and everyone's like, oh, you could just, you know, there's this gap of your reactions or how they've previously coped with it, and it just feels like impossible. How can mm-hmm. I stop before I act on yeah. that thing that I've been doing for so long and so many years, and it's just mm-hmm. like automatic? You're expecting me to stop yeah. that behavior? And it actually oddly happens, but I just never thought it could happen.
No,
and it happens
absolutely.
by being more aware, slowly but surely growing that awareness of what you're doing. And it's funny that you can kind of catch yourself a bit quicker yeah. each time in a way. But it takes time. And that's fine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously you don't want it to take years and years and years, but the more time that you commit to it, I think often kind of it means that the kind of skills that you're using get stronger. But it's really interesting, actually, like I'm just thinking about basically, obviously we're talking about the topic of body image. And yesterday, so I used to have body dysmorphia. I wouldn't say I have it now. Maybe on like very bad days, but I wouldn't say it's like diagnosable. So I'd be checking my body, you know, I'd say between 100 and 200 times a day. Like it was constantly get up, sit like from the desk and checks and stuff. And I never thought that that would be something that I could stop. I thought that would just be my life, like walking past windows and having to check and stuff like that. Mm. And gradually it did, like, you know, it stopped. Like it reduced. Mm-hmm. And actually yesterday was the first time that I felt like a compulsion to keep going back to check. And it was a really weird moment because I was like getting up to check, like constantly getting up in the hope that something would be different. And then I changed my outfit like 5 times mm-hmm. yesterday because I felt awful in all my clothes. And then I just stopped and I thought, oh my God, like it's like it's happened again. Like, but before it was just like my norm, whereas yesterday it was like, whoa, like we really need to think about what's happening right now in life to be like, why is it that I keep
why
going back
to
the mirror
to do that? It's your way of coping with something. I was thinking about this the other day as well with it's like acceptance for where you are as well. So like mm-hmm. wanting to change what you look like, looking in the mirror constantly, and not being accepting of what's happening, the feelings that you're having right now. So sitting with those feelings or being aware of those feelings that are going on and finding a different way of coping with it. Mm. What would be your strategy instead of going to your familiar?
So this is what I found really interesting as well, because before, when I was first struggling with the mirror, I thought that the way to deal with it would be to get rid of the mirror. So originally I turned the mirror around, put the bathroom mirror in the loft, and we weren't allowed mirrors in the house. And I thought that that was the way to manage it. And then I noticed that I would be looking at myself in the reflection of the TV or the reflection of the window or whatever. And I realized that actually it wasn't about removing the mirror, because the mirror wasn't the problem. It was the fact that I was like using that as a coping mechanism. And so what I tried to do instead was to reduce the like amount that I was looking in the mirror. So to still have it there if I really, really needed it, but to start doing other things that I knew helped me as well. So one thing I find is so important to me is like feeling socially connected. So I know that on my low days, if I haven't spoken to anybody, I get so much like reward from speaking to people and that buzz of connection that because I wasn't having that, I'd look in the mirror to get a buzz of, oh, you're looking good today, or to make myself feel bad because I wasn't looking good that day. So I'd try and like reach out to friends or speak to my partner. And then also getting outside. I think getting outside, we were speaking about this before we started the podcast, but just getting outside. Sometimes that felt like a compulsion because I also have a difficult relationship with exercise. So sometimes I'd just go and sit outside and just like, you know, be in the sun and just have the sun. And those like just putting in little things like that rather than running back to the mirror, I think gradually over time helped me to reduce that.
Yeah, and making the start to find those things and be aware of it is pretty huge, very impactful. I used to think that I'd, or hope that I would wake up and just be cured. It used to be my nightly thought, like, tomorrow I'm just going to wake up and I'm going to feel great. Like, I'd write diaries and be like, no, tomorrow's the day and I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel so good. I'm not going to binge, puke, anything. And it never ever happened like that. And when I realized that it's just not overnight and you have to keep trying every day. And also, sometimes when there are the slip ups, being nice to yourself. Like, that's okay. Like, we're going to have mistakes, not being perfect. That was so huge for me to not berate myself all the time when I did. I remember, when I was on a boat and I messed up. I did something that I didn't want to do anymore. And I called my cousin, and I would never call anyone. Like, I would always be something that I wanted to deal with on my own. I'm gonna go do this on my own. No one needs to know or worry or care. I'm a strong person. I will do this. And also totally riddled with shame, so I didn't want to talk about what the hell I was doing. Anyway, called her, and she was so lovely. And she said, "This is where the magic is, Tessa. You can just be nice to yourself and say, hey, I made a mistake." Like you would to your friend, like, don't worry, you've just messed up. Like, you're doing
Absolutely.
better than you've done before, and I really, but you really have to feel that so deep inside you, rather than be like, yeah, okay, right, forgive myself. And that was really, really, really hard, but really, really impactful. Finding new strategies, being kind to yourself, like, takes time, but
What
as
would
long
you?
as we can keep being a bit. Trying every day, keep trying every day.
What would you say your strategies were when you were trying to reduce those behaviors?
Actually spending time myself, because I think what was happening was for the years, 11 years of an eating disorder, was like constantly being on million miles an hour. Who the hell was Tessa? I didn't even know. I was relying on everyone else to tell me. And then I left a boat, and kind of life calmed down a bit because you work quite ridiculously on boats. And I kind of had to reconnect with myself, and I did that by sitting with myself. And sometimes it was super painful. Actually, to be honest, Hannah, it was really painful at the beginning because I moved in with my partner, and he works away a lot. And I instantly felt so alone. Oh my goodness, so lonely. None of my friends around. The closest person I knew was like 40 minutes away. And I started going into my old behaviors, dabbled with my old behaviors again because it was just familiar and it soothed me. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I had to. What was really going on there was, not being able to be with myself. The minute I was with myself, I would distract myself by eating or over-exercising or something, other than be with myself. And I had to learn to be with myself and sit with it and cry. And I remember the first one of the times where I just was like, "You just have to do this." And crying and writing, and I think I just letting it out and being okay with the feelings that arise, and that takes sometimes a lot of tears, sometimes telling somebody about it. I'm more open with how I speak about my feelings now, because I feel like it's okay to talk about it now, whereas I never made it okay before. And then nature for me is like so huge. I just want to be outside, like, feel the ground, touch the trees, like a flipping hippie in the lunatic bar. I love it. Feel the sun. Walking, cycling, but fundamentally, like, actually sitting and being with myself is huge, because those feelings just kind of dissipate. They do. You don't think they will. But they slowly but surely do. And the other side of that anger or frustration or upset is beauty. You just have to sit with that uncomfortable feeling for a bit, and it gets better.
I always find, I think the what you just said about sitting with yourself, like that is something that I would say was like the hardest part for me. Like I actively avoided alone time 100%, like, you know, if, like saying, if my partner was working away, I'd just go home to my mum and dad. Or, like, yeah. even if it was just, like, he was going out for dinner with a friend, I'd be like, well, I'm making plans. Like, there is no way that I'm going to be on my own. And I don't think, what I always find really strange, my thoughts never passed as far as what will happen if I'm on my own. It was just, I knew that being on my own felt so uncomfortable because I'd never really experienced it. Like, I'd gone from being an only child at home to then being in a 5-year relationship and then literally jumping, you know, into another relationship after that. So, like you said before, who's Tessa? I had no idea who Hannah was either. So, like, sitting on your own is like, wow, that's awful. Oh my God, I don't think that I can do that at all.
Yeah, and who really does it as well? Because it's the phone. Oh, so much fun, entertainment, everything right at your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's actually something that I wanted to, I was thinking about that. I don't know what made me think of it, but you just said something before. And I wanted to talk about phones and social media and stuff like that. Mm. I think that's what, when you asked me what were my, like, strategies for overcoming my body image, I forgot to say one thing I did was I didn't come off social media because I still wanted to, like, be able to talk to my friends and stuff. But I went through and every account that I found difficult, whether that was people I knew in my personal life or whether that was celebrities or whatever, I unfollowed celebrities, obviously, but then, like, hid people that were in my personal life. But, I mean, like, both you and I mean, I'm making an assumption actually there, but I personally had body image struggles before social media. So do you think that it's worsened things, or do you think it's just kind of a different way of having things thrown in our face?
Yeah, it's definitely worse than things. It's definitely worse than things. It's all about image now. Yeah. And there's so much, but half nakedness going on online that it's baffling, really. Yeah, I think it's really scary. And to sit down and go through your social media account and unfollow those people, it is so good, so worthwhile doing. But a lot of people don't do it. And it's like this thing where I don't get it, but it weirdly makes you feel crap, but you want to do it. Like, you're off to go on it, and then you're like, I really want to go on that thing. God, go on it. And then you don't even feel good from it, but you just wanted to do it so badly. It's like that big red button.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that to ourselves? And subconsciously as well, you have no idea what's going on when you're seeing all these images, people having a good time, la, la, la. Yeah, it's scary. And I think we've created a culture where we idolise these people online, but actually it's what's even scarier is we're actually feeding the problem by people being able to make money out of your insecurities. And, you know, I think it's a really scary place. And the problem with it is the external validation that people are wanting. I remember when my mum's friend said to me that her daughter did a cartwheel, and she was like, my, look at this, cartwheel. And then she said to her daughter when I was there, sometimes I'm not going to see it, but you can enjoy that yourself. Like, why can't you just commend yourself for that cartwheel, handstand, whatever? I just thought, God, that's really cool, because that's what's happening here is we're relying so much. And I'm not going to lie, Hannah, I did exactly the same thing. I was on a boat in Costa Rica and I was showing off. I was parading around. And my sister called me when I was there and she was like, you are being ridiculous. Like, what? Stop showing off. Think about how people are actually taking that. We're in lockdown. You're gallivanting around. Are you actually doing this? Because why are you doing that? And I love her to pieces because she calls me out, and that's what's so good at doing that, aren't they? And actually, that was a real wake-up call for me, because I wasn't happy at all. And I was completely showing off that I was, and not enjoying the moments by wanting to share them constantly. So, and I wanted that validation. I wanted that, even when I used to be a chef as well, any chef of the East Order, I know. and I'd take send pictures, post pictures of my food. And if, because if none of the people that I was serving the food to commented on my food that day, or I wasn't around when they would came and ate or whatever, I then saw myself sending pictures to my partner, to my family, because I was wanting the give me the validation.
Absolutely.
But actually, can we just take a second and be proud of ourselves for just who we are without needing it from other people constantly? Like, that's a process. And if you're doing that from such a young age and you're so used to that way of life, like, how are you going to ever develop that like self-love, self-worth, resilience, self-confidence?
Yeah.
If you're constantly relying on this external validation.
Mm. I often think as well that the like desire, like you were saying, if nobody had commented on your food, like in person, whether you send it to other people, I distinctly remember. So when I finished my A-levels, I went off to Cardiff Uni, and I was not very well at all with my eating disorder at the time. I shouldn't have gone to uni, but I was like, I am a perfectionist, I'm going to uni. There's no way that I'm taking a year out. And then 6 weeks in, like I had bad health conditions and I ended up going to hospital and I had to drop out of uni. And I had an album on Facebook called like Cardiff Uni, and I posted everything in there. Like it looked like I was having the time of my life. Obviously I didn't post the like hours of crying that I was doing every day, because you don't put that on social media. Mm. And I remember coming home and I met up with a friend. And I said to her, like, I've had to drop out of uni, you know, like things aren't great. She was like, I'm actually stunned, because to me, it looked like you were having such an incredible time. And I was so jealous of the time that you were having. And I remember sitting there and thinking, I never want to do that again. Like, I never want to post to make it look like I'm having a good time when actually I'm having a bad time. And I think that's something I've always tried to do with Full of Beans as well. It's like on the days where I'm feeling bad or I'm feeling low, I want to talk about that just as much as like the positives in recovery, because I just think, like you said, social media nowadays has got so much in it that's not real. It's just people, like, you know, with their highlight reel rather than what's actually going on. And it does just make you feel awful when you just scroll through.
Yeah.
And I remember having a conversation with a friend the other day, like, oh, you're always out, like, I wish I was out as much as you. And she was like, I look at your life that you put on social media and I want that. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, that's what we're all doing. We're all looking at pictures like, wish I had their body, I wish I had their life, and they're doing exactly the same to you.
I've literally got goose pimples thinking about that, because it kind of breaks my heart, really, for youngsters and growing up with that. And you can't help but feel it yourself when people, like you say, your friends and stuff, like, what have we done? But I mean, so how can we use it better? So how can we help them, and how can we create a place where we help each other more in a nice way, rather than a self-fulfilling way?
I think it makes it really hard, because editing pictures and posting the best parts of your life and all of that's really attractive. Like that. Like when you're actually engaging in it, that feels like a really good thing to do. And posting maybe more, you know, more of the truth, or, you know, like not sharing every inch of your life on Instagram or editing every picture, I think that's quite an uncomfortable thing to do. And like, you know, I'm not old in the slightest, but I'm 25. Like, I feel very out of the like loop of like social media and stuff. And so I'm not cool. So if I'm there like, oh, you know, here's a picture of me, like no filter, whatever, like my 13, 14 year old niece, she's not going to look at me and think, oh, I want to do the same. Like, she's looking at the girl that's edited a picture and like looks stunning and gets all those comments. She doesn't want to see me putting my no filter, like not getting any feedback about it. So I think it's a really difficult thing.
Yeah, and then we made it okay to use the filters and use the Botox and get the eyelashes done, lips done, and we've like normalized it, haven't we? Quite a lot of my friends have started getting Botox actually, and partly because they've seen themselves on team so much, we barely see ourselves at all.
That's
the day.
So true.
And now we're like, oh God, a constant mirror. And I get it. But this constant stuff that we're fed about, like, you know, even protein shakes, there's like protein shops or like on every corner.
Yeah.
Where it's all about do better, be more, better, more. And it's, and yeah, it's a multi-billion pound industry and we're feeding it. Oh my goodness. It literally breaks my heart.
If we're being positive, what?
Yes.
Because I feel like I have been so negative.
Come on.
Positivity.
Spin it round.
Where can we start to make this better? Because I feel like there's a big shift has already happened.
Yeah, I'm not, I guess not just social media, but social media wise is the big topic. But I think we do need to help each other more. Like, we have all these amazing therapists, every mental health work and stuff going on. Yes, there's a lot of waiting lists going on, but there's a lot of things that are available to us. But I think the thing that's missing is our ability to help each other more and want to help each other more. So my plans for being there is I want to be the WhatsApp for mental health, a place where people can talk in confidence to somebody who's gone through something similar, a place where you feel like you can talk about your mental health. And I don't know if we're ever going to be in that situation of having our family or friends or people that we feel like we could turn to about real deep stuff that's going on in our head necessarily. I'd love it to be like that, but I think we're a very long way away. And I think that's okay, because it's like we were saying right at the beginning, it's difficult to find that person who gets it. Because if I was to talk to my mum about this, she's just like, oh, just don't be so silly, just eat food. She doesn't get it, and that's fine. So imagine where, like, being able to connect with people who did, and we could all use our experience to benefit each other. And yeah, that's my way of looking at a solution. It's a lot of it is acceptance and resilience, and how do you teach that from a young age? Where are these lessons that we can learn and inspirational figures that we can look up to who are embodying that? And I do think we're, you know, the positivity movement and stuff is big and it's great. Like, the way in which there'll be tabloids about fat people going out constantly, and now it's like, no, fat shaming's not okay. 100% amazing. Look at the Victoria's Secret models that we're looking at these days compared to when we were younger. But we're still a while off, because people are still wanting something that they don't necessarily have. So how do you help embody acceptance? I don't have all the answers, Hannah, but I do think being there is one way.
I do. I was just
also
thinking
being genuine as well.
Yeah. I think we're in almost a weird limbo state. Like you were just saying there about your mum, maybe not being able to understand. Like, my mum also has had like body image struggles, and she's thankfully, for the past 15 years, has knocked diets on the head, which is brilliant. But you know, definitely, like, where she was growing up, I remember her telling me that her mum used to have these toffees, and she'd be like, that's so annoying that mum can have those toffees, like, up to my grandma can have those toffees and I can't. And they were like diet toffees or like laxatives, and that was so normal. So I think we're in like a weird place where, I mean, this is how I see it, like, my mum's generation, dieting was completely normalised, and like, it was so regular for you to be on a diet and to be striving to be smaller than what you were. It's almost like now we're like the rebellious generation, and we're like, we grew up with that as children, but we do not want that anymore. And then it's like, you know, you would hope then that that would mean that the next generation is like, yeah, like, I love my body, and or like, I at least accept my body and blah, blah, blah. And I think some are, but I think it's like a weird mix of still striving for the perfection and the smaller body that our generation did, but then it's like a 50-50 split of then like completely rebelling as well. And I don't know. Do you agree? Do you think?
I quite like that way of thinking about it. And I'd like to see that next generation really taking that in their strides.
Mm-hmm.
I find it difficult to visualize just because TikTok is that generation really, isn't it?
Oh,
and that's when you're
and that's the problem.
Dancing in front of a screen. Yeah. What's good? Sorry, TikTok, but what's good about TikTok? Do you know what I find really funny about TikTok is that the logo's black. So, and for me, I like love colors, and so mm-hmm. when I look at the black logo, I think of a dark place, and I think it is a dark place. And I tried to use it for a bit of people who are like, go on TikTok and try to give it a go, but there's something about just tapping onto that black logo where I just feel like I'm going to get into a black hole. I feel like it is.
I can't remember where I saw it, but I read an article the other day. I think I saw it on LinkedIn that somebody had written an article about TikTok, and they basically like were finding so many tips and tricks on how to diet and how to have an eating disorder and stuff like that. And well, I mean, it just made me so upset because I thought we were kind of, I didn't realise that something like that would be glorified. I found that really shocking. But I think the thing that I hate about TikTok the most, and why I have never allowed myself to have it, because I have a really short attention span anyway, but the fact that like they're such short videos, and then you have another one available, and then you have another one available, it's like, I know full well that I would get so drawn into that, and because you've just got that constant. But it's like you were saying earlier about, you know, we go, when I'm in a dark place, I know I'm in a dark place, because I'll go onto somebody's profile that has like, in my eyes, an ideal body type, and I will just be there for like an hour scrolling through, comparing myself to every single picture. And that's what TikTok is. It's just a constant stream of an ability to compare. And I think,
it is. And it's almost like feeds this competitiveness, doesn't it? Like, you know, it apparently equates to our credibility, our numbers and followers and likes and everything. And my sister actually doesn't have social media, and it's so cool chatting to her about like why and what's life like without it. She's actually the cool one. We need to go back around, and we need to be taking a leaf out of her book. But I think all of it, like you're saying with your friend, you know, wanting your life in this, and the stuff that we're seeing, the competitiveness it all comes back to acceptance, doesn't it? Like acceptance of what we look like, acceptance for where we are, acceptance of like, you know, our family, all of the stuff that we can't change really. And in this moment right now, and how do you instill that acceptance? And for me, I felt, particularly my body image, I felt I had to accept my body image because I actually didn't have my periods for a year. And I was in total denial about it. I was like, oh, it's just because of my pill and any excuse, knowing full well what was really going on, but couldn't even admit it, say it in my head or say it out loud. Eventually, I did to a doctor, and they were like, right, I think you know what you need to do here. Like you need to recover, like be in recovery, and you're not, because you're not wanting to let go of the diet, you're not wanting to let go of the habits, you're not wanting to let go of wanting to be smaller. And that was, and there I realized like, I guess I had to take my body and myself a bit more seriously. Like this is your one body, and you're now in this, your body's not functioning, and you're a woman, and you now can't house any children. Tessa, do you want children? Well, yeah, I do. And it all got very real, very quickly, very scarily. And I guess that was years of self-harm, wasn't it? That was years of self-hate. So there was a turning point there where I felt like forced into self-acceptance. I felt like forced, like I had to accept myself right now. But how can we make it easier for people to accept themselves? I think a lot of it is, not striving for this, being happy with what you've got, like, being grateful, getting to know yourself, being with yourself, and acknowledging those good bits of you, and also those bad bits. They're great too.
Yeah.
And that's a journey, but that's a journey that we all need to be on if we're going to be using social media in a safe way, and not using it in a way that's going to be harming us, which it seems to be doing more than we have any idea what's going on right now. It's absolutely horrific. And I do think that it's an unsafe place if you're not feeling that kind of level of acceptance. It doesn't have to be love for yourself, but acceptance feels like a start.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. I mean, maybe I'll ask you if you have any advice with this, but because you just were saying about, like, you know, not being able to house a child and get pregnant and stuff. One thing I found really hard is being able to see the bigger picture of things. So, you know, being told, well, you know, if you carry on like this, you might not be able to have a child and stuff. I can't in my head rationalize that that's a possibility, because that's in the future. That's not right now. Whereas, you know, taking a picture of myself and looking, you know, the way that I desire, that's an instant, like, I've got that right now. And so if I'm being completely honest, I think for me, that's often what's kept me in this kind of cycle of it, is that I get instant rewards from that. Whereas thinking about the bigger picture and recovery in long term, that's a long term reward. And my brain doesn't work like that.
I totally agree, Hannah, and that's why, you know, it had to knock me over the head and have a year of no periods to really, 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 really realise that. And it's a shame that it had to happen that way. But surely it's like, what's it costing you right now? Like, doing what I equally did not see the bigger picture, and people would, I'd know that I wouldn't be able to, like, people would say you couldn't have children. I was like, of course I can. Like, everything's going to be fine. Like, I'm fine. It's all fine. In this moment, it's fine. Not fine at all. But if somebody did kind of say to me, like, what is it costing you? Like, what is your eating disorder? What is your obsession with body image costing you? Well, okay, it's costing me all of my flipping headspace. Every single ounce of my headspace is about, what have you eaten today? What do you look like today? What did your belly look like first thing in the morning? Oh, how many calories have you eaten? Oh, what have you exercised today? Oh, you're under exercised, you've over exercised. All of these that took up all my headspace. I had no room for anything else. It cost me my relationships, from basically, I think, being selfish, to be quite honest. It was quite a selfish time of my life. Like, it was all about wanting a better body image, wanting to be accepted, was basically what it came down to. And then it also was work. Like, I just felt like it costed me my whole entire life. And I think when you can work out if what's going on for you right now is worth it, is it what it's costing you? I mean, you've got to have some reality, surely, to work out that if it is or if it isn't. But I mean, if somebody was to ask me in that moment where I did think, yeah, I'm going to be able to have children, or I don't need to think about that yet, but what is it costing you right now? Well, actually quite a lot. And I don't want it to be like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, listening to you say all of that, then it's like, wow, yeah, like, it does really dip into so many parts. But I think when you're in it in the moment, it's almost, there's an excuse for that, like, you know, oh well, you know, it's affecting my relationships, but, like, you know, they'll still be there, they're not going anywhere. And you know, I think for some people that is true, but I lost a lot of friends. And I don't think even when I lost them did I realise that the reason was because I was so focused on everything, on the eating disorder rather than everything else.
So then surely it's about making life about others, because it's quite an insular thing, isn't it? You're so in your own head, you're so wanting something for yourself, perhaps, that when you're wanting something for somebody else, that's pretty special, and it gives your focus outside of yourself. And, you know, when you're helping somebody, whatever it may be, it comes back around. It feels good. It feels good too. So, you know, like your podcast and things that you've done to help other people, those must have had an imprint on those feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I've kind of always been of the opinion that, in the same sense of, you know, when we were talking about earlier with like the mentor and stuff, and you know, having that incredible relationship, but not almost not wanting to be reliant on that person, because if you know they have their own life as well, and they might have their own struggles. I think initially when it comes to recovery, and this is just my personal opinion, because I know that I'm a very reliant person, and I like other people's reassurance. At the start, I was like, I'm going to do this for my partner so that we can have a good life together. And I'm going to do this for my mum and dad because they've been through a lot with me. And that really helped start with. But there came a point where I thought, I think I've got to do this for myself now. Like, doing it for them didn't feel quite enough. And I think that point also coincided with getting comfortable in like, in who I was and working out who I was and spending time on my own. I think initially it was like a really good kickstart to be like, I'm going to do this for others and stuff. And then it was like, yeah, I'm like the only person that's going to be with me forever. So might as well start to get to like myself.
Yeah, that's really nice. And it is a nice way to start it really, but it does come down to us, doesn't it? And people, you know, people can love us as much as they can, but we also need to be able to give ourselves that. Yeah, but gave me goose pimples.
Well, I think that is a wonderful way. I think we hit the positivity there at the end, which was really nice.
We got there in the end.
But just a bit more about being there. Because I'm sure people will be super duper keen and interested to get involved. So how can anybody and everybody get involved with being there?
So if you are going through some body image struggles, and that can all encompass a lot, comparing ourselves, not feeling comfortable in our own skin, disordered eating disorders, then please, you can download the app from the App Store or Play Store and chat to a mentor. We're now piloting it, so we have spaces available for mentees to be mentored. And yeah, they're all lovely human beings who just want to help, and they're all volunteers. So, I mean, that says something when they're volunteers giving up their time to help each other. Like, lovely, the healing power of shared experience. And secondly would be mentors. We'll be looking for more mentors from to launch in September. So if you have struggled and you feel like you'd like to give back, and we vet, but we also do a training course.
Awesome.
So you know, if you don't feel like you know what to say, or you know what, you don't feel like you might not have the right skill base or something yet, that's something that we provide to ensure that. And then, as we are a charity, donations are always lovely. It keeps us going. It keeps us being able to recruit vet and train more mentors to be able to help more people. So, yeah, always looking for donations or people who want to get in touch. info@beentheapp.com.
Awesome. And do you have social media and a website if people want to check it out?
Yeah, so our website is pretty cool, actually. I quite like it. It's www.beentheapp.com. Honestly, have you checked it out, Hannah?
I have, yeah.
Do you like the ripped piece of paper?
I love it, yeah. I think it's really cool. It's a really cool layout.
It's a bit different.
Yeah.
An image is really difficult to kind of interpret. Mm-hmm. Everyone interprets an image very differently of a human. But I kind of went into it with scraps of paper and words, and it's all a bit of an amalgamation of my mind. Mm-hmm. So enjoy. And with the Instagram is beentheapp.
Cool. Amazing.
So come check us out.
And I'll put that all in the show notes for easy access for everybody. But thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And it just felt so timely as well, with like, this week being a bit of a difficult body image week. So it's really nice to have this chat today and kind of be fresh and a good conversation.
Nice. Thanks, Hannah. It's been lovely. Thank you for my first ever podcast. So I hope I'm okay.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.